The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today's show will be the last Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. I would like to thank all of our listeners for your loyal participation through the 2.5 years that this radio health care clinic was brought to you by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation. It has indeed been an honor to be here each week to help identify a breakthrough for your medical problems, such as the 60-year-old wife and mother to 5 grown children from Illinois, who had unrecognized sleep apnea as a major factor in her cardiac arrest, the 45-year-old woman from Florida, suffering from miserable and painful mouth and throat ulcers as a complication of bone marrow transplant for leukemia, who could not find any pain relief, but has new hope now with a therapy that we on this show were able to provide her. It turned out that my guest had recently been to a convention of oncologists where a colleague from Washington State shared his exciting results using a new therapeutic approach with a small group of similar patients in his practice. This successful approach had not been published, but was now brought to this woman to try, eliminating in a moment the knowledge gap between a specialist in Washington and a suffering woman here in Florida. And thirdly and last example was of a 63-year-old woman who attended our annual symposium and the seminar on skin cancer. She had a mole on her neck, but had been told by 2 doctors that it was nothing to worry about. After seeing the slides and participating in the seminar, she decided to have the mole biopsied. It turned out to be melanoma, which of course can kill within months. She is now alive and well 3 years later, and credits Focus on Females with saving her life. I will leave you with a strong recommendation. Be proactive. Take charge of your health. Seek out information that will help you understand and become a lay expert for your medical problems. This will enable you to better partner with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced cost of avoidable medical and emergency care. It is a matter of life and death. And continue to attend our annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium. The 6th annual event is scheduled for Saturday, March 12th at the Tampa Convention Center. We will have at least 16 different seminars, healthcare screenings, fitness classes, and wellness chair massages. We will also have a panel discussion on the future of healthcare in Florida with the president of the Florida Medical Association and members of Governor Scott's healthcare transition team. It's all free. And finally, if you have a question or comment, feel free to email me by going to our website at focusonfemales.com and click Contact Us. The Focus on Females Education Foundation and I wish you all the great health care and happiness in the world, and hope to see you Saturday, March 12th at the 6th Annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium at the Tampa Convention Center. Register now at focusonfemales.com. And now you will join a previously recorded Radio Healthcare Clinic program already in progress. Thank you.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today we're tackling the future of medicine with guest expert, the president of the Florida Medical Association and obstetrician-gynecologist Dr. Madeline Butler. But first, the radio show, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in our country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events and a combined 7,500 hours of education during these two symposia, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And by the way, listeners of ours today can see articles, educational articles, appearing in every issue of the Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper, which is free and can be found at over 3,000 Tampa Bay area locations, such as medical offices, health clubs, specialty organic grocery stores, hair and beauty salons. These articles are written by myself. They're educational, informational, and resourceful, and demonstrate the impact of Focus on Females on individuals just like you. Today, we are taking a little different tack in that we are tackling and looking at the future of medicine. This is exceedingly important in these changing times because, indeed, the future of medicine impacts every living individual, no matter whether you're healthy today or have medical issues to deal with. And so we're very fortunate to have Dr. Madeline Butler, the president of the Florida Medical Association, with us. And Madeline, it's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, Steve. Nice to be on the show.
A bio for Dr. Butler. Dr. Madeline Butler is a obstetrician-gynecologist and the founder and managing partner of the Women's Group, an all-female OBGYN provider group. Her practice is in Tampa, Florida, and she graduated from the University of Florida College of Medicine. She did a residency at the University of South Florida. Dr. Butler's gynecologic emphasis is on women's wellness, the menopause transition, and medical and surgical treatment of GYN problems. She and her husband have three children, ages 9, 14, and 15. And as mentioned, Dr. Butler is the current president of the Florida Medical Association. She also leads medical missions to Haiti and is a delegate to the American Medical Association. And indeed, on top of all that, she finds time to volunteer to the Judeo-Christian Clinic. And by the way, as you all listen to this, I encourage each and every one of you to call in with your questions, because as mentioned above, this topic impacts each of us, whether we are healthy now or whether we are dealing with a medical issue. What is our future? Will we be able to reliably obtain access to physician and medical care, health care? What kind of care will that be? Will that be quality care or just bargain basement care? What should we expect? So these are the questions, just really tip of the iceberg stuff. Feel free to call in with your questions. We encourage you to do so. The number here you can reach us is at 289-1860, 289-1860. That's Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's toll-free 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. And I can tell you, you will not have many opportunities to speak with a president of a state medical association, so I encourage you to call in now. Madeline, tell us why you went into medicine, a little bit about your history and upbringing, and we'd like to hear about that.
Well, Steve, I was born in Cabaguan, Las Villas, Cuba, and after the Communist Revolution, my father brought our family to the United States. And I grew up understanding the importance of democracy, the importance of having a voice, making your vote count. I grew up in a medical family, and in fact, I have aunts that were physicians. And many women in Cuba, at a time when not many women in the United States were pursuing a career in medicine, my aunts were physicians. I have one that's a physician and two that were pharmacists. So I grew up seeing medical practice. I saw my aunts take a very proactive approach with their patients. They were part of their patients' lives, and I think that really impacted on me at a very early age.
Can you comment on what changed when the communists overtook Cuba insofar as the impact on healthcare delivery?
Well, I think what happens when there's government control of medicine is that the approach changes from a doctor-patient approach to a doctor-population approach. In other words, it's no longer what is good for the individual, but what is good for the entire population, at times at the expense of the individual. And I think what happened in Cuba is initially what you saw was good. Everyone had access to basic preventative care. But then at the beginning and at the end of life, when perhaps more intensive care was required, there were sacrifices that were made on behalf of the population that, in fact, were of detriment to the individual. So what happens invariably is there is rationing, and more expensive care is not delivered to people at the end of life because all of the investment is made in the more well young population.
So sometimes the desire for healthy population can impact the health of an individual.
Exactly. And I think another thing that you see is a tremendous emphasis on reproductive services. And, of course, in a communist country, there's pretty much abortion on demand, and abortion is used as a form of birth control. And one of the things that even I see now in some of the patients that come to the United States from Cuba, a lot of them are given contraception at a very early age, intrauterine devices when they go off to work in some of the work camps that are co-ed with very poor supervision. A lot of them will have subsequent ectopic pregnancies, STDs, as a result of having some of these contraceptives at such a young age.
Well, now, how does that experience impact your views on healthcare in our country?
Well, I believe when I took the Hippocratic Oath in medical school, I promised to do what was right for my patient, to the patient that I had in front of me. And I promised to do what was right for that patient without regard to how much the treatment cost. As a matter of fact, I was supposed to prescribe the very best treatment, not being worried about the price. Now, having said that, let me just say that as a physician, I also have the right, and I also have the responsibility that if there are two treatments that are equally the same, of course I will prescribe the least expensive treatment. But my individual patient comes first, and I don't think about the population at large and what's best for the population at large. I think about the patient in front of me and what's best for that particular patient.
Now, after all, as physicians, isn't that our sole responsibility to do what's best for the patient and put that information in their hands?
That is the Hippocratic Oath that we all took. However, there are some right now in government that are questioning whether that is the oath we ought to take and whether, in fact, our responsibility should not be to the population at large.
Well, when we talk about responsibility to the population at large, see that segues into developing guidelines that everyone must follow in delivering care. And my concern is, are we hurting patients when physicians are forced to follow bureaucratic algorithms of care?
I think that the answer to that is yes and no. Yes, we should have algorithms that are science-based. And all of, for example, in my field, we have the American College of OBGYN, and they have guidelines. And in my practice, we actually follow those guidelines. But we also have to take the individual patient into account when we look at those guidelines. And sometimes there's something very specific about that patient that would have me as their physician have to deviate from those guidelines. So guidelines are good, but they cannot be the end-all in taking care of a patient.
And as I might say, the key is what you mentioned, scientific algorithms, not bureaucratic algorithms.
Exactly. And they have to be algorithms based on what's best for the patient, not what is based on cost and savings. It has to be what is going to get the patient well the quickest, not what is going to get the patient well eventually that's the least expensive.
And isn't it the case with physician autonomy and, indeed, medicine as a discipline of science, that the knowledge base will continues to expand, and therefore what's right today may be wrong tomorrow? And when we have to, it's a living, breathing discipline. We have to be able to adjust before perhaps, overly extensive documented scientific studies are published sometimes.
That is absolutely correct, Steve. And I think, too, that technology is advancing at an exponential rate. And with advancing technology, when technology is new, sometimes it's very expensive. but that technology can sometimes be the very best way to approach a particular illness. And it's very difficult to tell a patient, you know, we have this great new way of taking care of you, this great procedure, but I can't offer it to you because it's too expensive. And that is the dilemma that we face when we talk about the rising cost of healthcare.
Okay. Again, we're going to go for a quick break, but again, I encourage each and every one of you to call now, 289-1860. That's 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600. We are tackling the future of medicine. You have a question on this topic. There's no question about that. Call in now. Share it with us. Bye-bye.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, a proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a Best Doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's Top Ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860. And everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, it is 1:22 in the afternoon. We are with Dr. Madeline Butler, who is the president of the Florida Medical Association. And today we are tackling the future of medicine, and we encourage each of you listening to call in today with your question, your concerns. Our phone number here is 289-1860. That's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough, it's 877-969-8600. And so, Madeline, as the law has passed, as the health care law has passed in its present form, what will the delivery system look like? In over the next several years as this unfolds?
Well, I think the answer to that is no one exactly knows, but what's being tossed about is the concept of the accountable care organization. An accountable care organization is going to be a group of primary care physicians, specialists, durable medical equipment suppliers, hospitals, nursing homes, a large conglomerate of healthcare providers who will be assigned a certain number of patients. Then insurers and the federal government will be basically paying per covered life for healthcare delivery. Now, there will be some bundled payments per covered life, and then there will be some other things that are reimbursed apart and separate from that. But the thought is that through the concept of gain sharing, savings, buying things in bulk, algorithms that are going to come down from the federal government on how to take care of people, that these sorts of things will create bulk savings that can then be distributed among the participants of the accountable care organization.
Okay, and Sandra, I see you on the line. We're going to come right back. We'll come right to you in a moment. But Madeline, this sounds awfully close to the HMOs and the push toward capitation and the purchasing of physicians' practices that we saw back in, what, the 90s?
That is absolutely correct. That's exactly what it sounds like. What's going to be a little different is that the Secretary of Health and Human Services is going to be able to allow us to get around some antitrust issues where we can collaborate together. But you're right. We've seen this before through capitation, through managed care companies. We saw it in the 80s and 90s when large corporations bought physicians, and because they didn't have experience managing physician groups, it all fell apart. So the difference here is that the secretary has actually 1,084 places in this health care bill. She has a discretion to make judgments and change things to enable this ACO concept to function.
So this individual,
Secretary Sebelius, currently.
Right. Okay. So we hope that she is certainly a Solomon, and as far as her wisdom is concerned, because I don't know how any one human being can be given such a charge. That's an amazing power over each and every American. But ultimately, it boils down to, I think, what Sander's question is, and that is the doctor-physician. Excuse me, the physician-patient relationship. And so, Sandra, if you would join us now, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. You're joining us from Tampa.
Yes, thank you very much. I have a question for Dr. Butler.
Okay.
You mentioned earlier, Dr. Butler, about the doctor-patient relationship. I am very concerned about that relationship. I don't want to talk via a screen to my doctor. From the things that I've read, that seems to be where we're headed. Could you just talk about that a little bit and why we're headed in that direction?
Well, I think, Sandra, that I share your concern, as does as do the physicians of the Florida Medical Association. You know, we believe that the relationship between a doctor and her patient is sacred. And I believe that as your physician, I need to be giving you the very best possible advice that I believe will get you well the quickest. And if this health care reform bill passes, there are going to be guidelines, and I have to adhere to those guidelines. And to deviate from those guidelines, I then have to go through some process. I don't think we know what that process is, but that is one of the big objections that a lot of physicians have, is that we feel that the federal government is going to be the elephant in the room, in the exam room, when you and I are interacting.
And I might add, Madeline and Sandra, if your physician does not abide by those guidelines, that physician exposes him or herself to penalties and fines.
That is correct.
Well, am I right that it's very possible that I would not be in the same room with my physician? I guess what I'm saying, he's going to talk to me or she through a screen, like a computer. Is that true? Was this on the agenda? That's what's going to be?
No, it's I don't know if you're referring to electronic health records. You will be in the same room with a physician. But I think that there will be a philosophical screen in that we're going to be having to adhere to certain guidelines and we can't deviate. We're going to be able to prescribe certain medications that are going to be put forth by a comparative effectiveness committee that are going to look at the costs of treatments, the cost of technologies, the cost of medications, and are going to determine whether for the greater good those are the best treatments, or given the patient, how old they are, what their life expectancy is, And this is where the whole discussion of rationing comes in. Now, some might argue we have rationing now because there are certain medicines that are not covered by certain managed care companies, but this is taking rationing to a whole new level because it's going to determine how far we're going to go at the end of life and the beginning of life with expensive treatments.
I think, Sandra, correct me if I'm wrong, you may be concerned about what I've read, and maybe you've read it as well, down the road, maybe further than what we're looking at right now, at some point in time, your clinical data may be entered into a computer by a technician and, you know, outspits a diagnosis and a treatment, which maybe a physician or someone of responsibility has to just kind of check off.
Well, I saw something on television not too long ago where a woman comes into her doctor and wants to see Dr. Jones, let's say, and the receptionist says, oh, he's not here, but you can speak to him. And they go into another room, and there's this big screen. And the doctor says, hello, Mary. And she says, oh, hello, Dr. Jones. And they talk. And they said, this is what we're headed for.
So there was no hands-on.
No. It was through a computer screen. And when I saw that, I said,
this is not my cup of tea.
Yeah, that is telemedicine. That is happening now.
It is happening now.
Yeah, it is happening now. It's happening now more in the field of radiology and some other things. But there are some remote consultations that you can have with specialists at university centers. But it's meant to take place after you have had a physical exam in your local area. But it is, you know, and that may be, I don't see that in the immediate future, but it may be in the far distant future.
It may be.
Hang on, Sandra. Okay. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call in now.
Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. It's 1:32 in the afternoon, and we're focusing on the future of medicine. With me is guest expert, the president of the Florida Medical Association, obstetrician-gynecologist Dr. Madeline Butler. And we just had Sandra call. We don't. She's not with us any longer, but she brought up the issue of doctor-patient relationship and how the changes in healthcare that are in place, at least right now, will impact that physician-patient relationship. And talking about the guidelines, as well as other things, the guidelines that physicians must abide by or face penalties and fines. In fact, by making physicians answerable to the federal bureaucracy, Madeline, does this bill not effectively make physicians government employees and perhaps suggest that physicians are no longer in charge of healthcare decision-making?
Well, I think that it definitely erodes the doctor-patient relationship, and it makes us more technicians and less a person that can integrate the patient in the context of her family. It takes the art out of medicine. You know, we were talking about this at the last break, that medicine is not just a science, but it's an art. And when you make a physician follow cookbook guidelines without taking into account the specifics regarding the patient, her context in a family and in her culture, all the other things that affect health, that you're in essence reducing and eliminating the art of medicine, which is so important to the whole practice.
Yeah, and if you're not able to at times think outside the box, or certainly have the time to relate to the patient and see what other factors that may be going into the reason why they have hypertension, that will affect and erode, as you point out, the quality of care. And so, do you feel that this is a big concern about the healthcare law as it is now?
I do. I think that, as we were speaking about previously, when a patient comes to your office, she may come in with a particular complaint, but through the result of getting the history and doing the physical exam, you may discover other health factors that are affecting her presenting complaint. And I think that that is what's going to be missed. And then when you limit the options that you can give the patient to get better quicker, I think that that is where the greatest impact lies, that you've got to feel free as a physician to make your best recommendation for that patient's well-being.
It's interesting. I'll give you an example that perhaps everyone can identify with or at least understand. Back in early 90s, after I came to town, I was in practice for a few years, and a patient was sent to me with recurrent squamous cell carcinoma of the ocular surface, the conjunctiva. The traditional approach at that time was excision with cryotherapy. So excise the lesion and freeze it. But even with that approach, 10% or more patients had recurrence. So a patient was sent to me with multiple recurrences of this disease, and obviously the squamous cell carcinoma could metastasize and ultimately be fatal. Thinking outside the box, I went into the dermatology literature and identified a compound, which we all know now is interferon, and used that interferon. I compounded it. I had a pharmacy compound it into a topical drop for the eye. And, well, anyway, long story short, it completely eliminated the carcinoma, not only, well, quickly, within 2 months, and gone forever. Never came back after, well, 10, 20 years of follow-up. So the point is that will that thinking outside the box be preserved in this kind of system or healthcare environment as we go forward?
Well, I think that that would probably classify as something that, I don't know if it was experimental at the time, but certainly doctors every day use treatments that are outside FDA guidelines. And I think in all likelihood, that would preclude all of us from doing that. Even in obstetrics, we use medications, for example, terbutaline to stop preterm labor, preterm contractions. A lot of times we don't do it to stop preterm labor, but just to make the mother more comfortable. That is outside the indication for the FDA, but obstetricians across America use that medication for that purpose. So I think that as we bureaucratize medicine, that kind of leeway that we've all had through the years will likely be taken away.
Isn't that potentially devastating to the quality of care we offer patients?
Absolutely.
And really, that's how advances are made. You identify a successful therapy, you report on it, you share it with your colleagues, it grows, and the successful therapy is then extended to other people in the country, and other people's lives are saved or enhanced because of that new advancement.
Well, and that's one of the other arguments, that any time that the government takes a greater role in any industry, you really squash innovation. And that's how technology develops. That's how new treatments are discovered, through innovation, imagination, creativity, and then the scientific process.
How about this whole issue of, as you mentioned, comparative effectiveness research and the Independent Payment Advisory Board and so forth, which looks at whether or not there's been sufficient research on a topic, a therapy, pharmaceutical device, to allow that to be offered to patients. In other words, things that have been used and procedures that have been used for a long time, years and years, that have the empirical positive results will be called into question about whether or not we'll continue to be able to offer these therapies to patients if there's not a large body of research showing its comparative effectiveness.
Well, the Comparative Effectiveness Board is literally going to look at a diagnosis. It's going to look at all the available treatments, and it's going to look at cost versus outcome. And they're going to basically say that certain treatments are outliers. They're too costly if you look at the outcome. They're going to deem some experimental. You know, to some degree, currently we have, for example, bone marrow transplant is still considered experimental. However, patients get it all the time. And I think that they're going to be looking at a patient's age, quality of life, expected life expectancy, and they're going to make determinations as to what is appropriate at the end of life. You know, and it is rationing. I don't care how you look at it, it's rationing.
But not just end of life.
At the beginning of life also.
But also, let's say, you know, a person developed, you know, leukemia, and maybe they need a bone marrow transplant, and maybe they're in their 40s.
Right. You know? They would make determinations. They would evaluate whether a bone marrow transplant is appropriate, given the fact that maybe the patient might have had a few recurrences, and now whether it's worth, whether it benefits the entire population to spend those resources on a 48-year-old that has had a recurrence of leukemia for the third time. Those are the difficult questions that they're going to address.
It's scary, of course, to hear those words.
Yes.
But everyone needs to be aware of that. And again, before we talk more about this topic, again, I encourage each and every one of you to call in with your questions. 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Outside of Hillsborough County, 877-969-8600. So let's look at the... you mentioned the medical care delivery system, these accountable care organizations, maybe a throwback to the 90s or earlier, as far as capitation, HMOs, with bundled payments, and somehow hospitals and nursing homes and physicians and so forth have to figure out, you know, how the reimbursements get divided up, which sounds like really...
That's going to be a nightmare. It's going to create a tremendous amount of tension between all the different...
Who should be working together.
...components of the healthcare team. And I think that, especially for physicians, this is an area that the Florida Medical Association is very concerned about, because depending on who owns and controls these accountable care organizations, the trickle-down on this bundled payment that's going to be given, whoever owns it is probably going to get the lion's share of that money. So, you know, that is one of the major identified problems with this accountable care organization model. And interestingly, I have to point out, President Obama himself pointed to the Mayo system as a particularly outstanding healthcare delivery system, and is very much like an accountable care organization. But in the Health Care Reform Act, he makes it illegal for physicians who started the Mayo Clinic to ever start something like that again. However, Secretary Sebelius is going to make some antitrust changes, supposedly to enable physicians to be able to lead accountable care organizations. So it's a little, you know, one thing negates the other, which is very interesting.
It's a lot of confusion.
Right.
And again, but that intimates a forcing of physicians into a certain model of delivery care.
Right. It's consolidation. The small group solo practice physician will likely be a very rare. Now, and it's all the way it's set up, because I think that there will be a certain doctors that will have these boutique practices outside the system, because with this huge conglomerate care, there will be people that will be dissatisfied with that method of delivery. So I think there will still be room for physicians that stay outside the system. But again, it depends on how the laws are written.
How about the medical home concept? How does that fit in with the accountable care?
The medical home concept exists within the accountable care. It's very similar. It's just a building block, if you will, of the accountable care organization.
Could you explain that to our listeners, the medical home concept?
The medical home concept says that there's a primary care physician who will be assigned a certain number of patients, and then that physician and his or her staff will be responsible for coordinating the patient's care, referring to people that are in a network, if you will, and the federal government will pay that medical home a little bit extra to coordinate the care of the patient. Now, with this health care coordination will come responsibilities of utilization to make sure people aren't getting unnecessary testing, et cetera. So there are some details in that have not worked well, have not been worked out well, but states like North Carolina are already using the medical home concept for Medicaid, and they have actually been able to save quite a bit of money.
Now, my concern is that there is literally an explosion of knowledge, of course, in every aspect of healthcare, as the science, the technology, the understanding of disease at a molecular basis continues to progress. There is new understandings that there is... My own personal belief, it's very difficult for a general practitioner to really be in control or be knowledgeable about all these advances. If patients are forced to go, for example, through a gatekeeper, don't they run a risk at not accessing the most recent information and therapies that's available, and thereby actually, and I've seen it personally in practice, delay the accurate diagnosis, delay the accurate therapy, and ultimately increase the costs to that patient? And is there not a concern or potential for that?
Well, I think there is a potential for that. I think that you would have specialists as part of a medical home concept, but again, specialty care is usually, it can be more expensive. It can be a lot less expensive if you refer the patient appropriately and you get the patient treated.
Timely diagnosis and treatment.
But again, when you get a bundled payment, it's going to be to the primary care physician's benefit to refer later rather than earlier.
That's right. And that was one of the issues and problems with the HMOs and the capitated plan.
Right. you never want your physician's payment to be predicated on whether they get you more expensive care, less expensive care, an early referral, a late referral. A physician's duty should be to the patient.
Right.
It should not be to the business model or to how they're going to be distributing a payment. It should be strictly and solely what's best for their patient.
Right. So the pros and cons of the bill that was passed.
Well, I think one of the pros that everybody can agree with is no denial for pre-existing condition. I think another...
Before we go any further, let's talk a little about that. How will that impact the fact that if a person goes to an insurance company with a pre-existing and must be accepted by that insurance company, which is a great thing, but can a person game the system?
Yes.
And therefore not purchase health insurance until they develop a disease and then go to insurance company. Insurance company is forced to underwrite them.
That is correct. So that is a pro. That can also be a con. Because the con is then if you can do that, and people will, then you and I that have had insurance will likely pay more to be able to accommodate people that come in with advanced stages of lung cancer, et cetera. So
who have not paid into the system previously.
Exactly. So yeah. We're going to pay people that have insurance, that have always had insurance, are going to be charged more for their premium. But that is a perceived pro. The other perceived pro is at a time when most kids are still getting their educations, they're in college, they can stay on their parents' insurance. Then again, there are those that argue that further encourages people to not leave the nest. You know, there's a problem with that in this country, that you've got kids that are in their late 20s still living at home, in part because of the economy. But this, in essence, delays the maturation process that should be happening by the time you go off to college.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a pro that can also be a con. Another pro is supposedly 32 million more people will get insurance. But when you consider what that insurance is, a high percentage of that, of those folks, will be on Medicaid. And, you know, how are you going to fix? You can tell somebody they have Medicaid coverage, but if you don't have a doctor that will see you, then in essence you have coverage with no access. And for the Florida Medical Association, we're particularly concerned because many doctors don't take Medicaid because they just cannot pay their overhead to take Medicaid. And we're seeing a push nationally and at state levels to tie medical licensure into accepting Medicaid. In other words, now we become indentured servants to the government, where they're telling us what patients we have to see. So, you know, on every side of the pro, you know, you can look at a con. But, you know, I think as physicians, we're always glad when more people can see a doctor and have access to care. But the question is, are they going to have access?
Okay, on that note, we're going to take a quick break and come back with more. The phone number here to call in with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. For those streaming online and out of town, it's 877-969-8600. We'll be right back with more.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin.
Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, a proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a Best Doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's Top Ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Focus. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860. And everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling the future of medicine with the president of the Florida Medical Association, obstetrician-gynecologist Dr. Madeline Butler, who practices in Tampa with the women's group. And she's been sharing some of her insights as well as her personal reflections on the delivery of health care with us today. We have a few minutes left, so now is the time to call in with your question. We are at 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Elsewhere, toll free, 877-969-8600. So, tell us, single-payer systems, is that ultimately what we're looking at, a slow trip down that lane?
I believe that definitely, you know, I'll just mention a couple of things in the bill. If you employ 50 employees or more and you do not provide health insurance for the employees, if one of your employees is in a federally subsidized plan, that's one of the co-op plans or one of the federal pooled insurance products, then you are going to have to pay $2,000 per employee. Well, I use myself as an example because my practice employs approximately 75. For my practice, it would be less expensive for me to just not provide the insurance, pay $2,000 per employee, and allow everyone to purchase from a federal pool product. So in essence, they are encouraging, I believe, small and medium-sized businesses to go into the public,
option or plan,
or the federally funded plans. Mm-hmm. Then if you are with some exceptions for severe poverty, if you're an individual, by I think 2014, you're going to have a mandate to purchase insurance, but the fine is $695. And I would submit to most people that the insurance is going to cost much more than that. So if you are a 32-year-old young healthy person, it might be worth your while to pay the fine and not have the insurance. And then are you going to take people like that to jail? There are all sorts of questions like that. So I believe that eventually the way the bill is set up, where you're taxing, you're making the insurance companies pay a 40% excise tax on these Cadillac plans, which are family plans that cost in excess of $27,000 per year. You're telling them that you cannot make a profit beyond X, and you're saying that they have to take all comers. You're in essence setting up private insurers to fail and thus taking people toward the federally funded plans. I mean, that's just the way I read it. I think that if you really look into the bill, there's no other conclusion to draw.
A couple minutes left. Tell us about the AMA and how it is that they came out in such staunch support of the health care reform bill when most all physicians I know, and of course you would have even more to say on that, more experience, more physicians to talk with, seem to be against it.
Well, I think that Florida is unique. I think probably 80% of our physicians are still self-employed. They are still in small group practices. If you look at the AMA is made up of a delegation that is predominantly older. Many of them are semi-retired or retired. Many of them are employed. Many of them are in academic practices. And I think that if you look at the mission of the Florida Medical Association, our mission is to help physicians practice medicine, whereas the mission of the AMA is more geared toward promoting public health. And I think that paramount to public health is getting everyone coverage.
It goes back to the population versus the individual focus.
Right. And I think that, you know, if you look at different states, they don't see it the way we see it in Florida. You know, we have a lot of elderly people that are on Medicare that require a lot of health care. And I think that we have a unique perspective on things. But, you know, only it's probably about 15%, 13% now of all doctors in America belong to the AMA.
How about the criticism, or at least the observation, that the AMA also wants to protect the monopoly that the government has created for it, the medical coding system? Is that valid?
Well, if you talk to the leadership, they say it's not valid, but it's definitely a fact that they make a lot of money from coding. Another issue is that most of their money is not from membership.
Okay. In one sentence, if you can, what's the take-home message here?
Well, I think the take-home message is that with change comes opportunity. I don't think we know if the health care plan is going to be enacted, but I think that we have to be vocal and we have to vote. We have to let our politicians know how we feel about all these things.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Malin
you.
Butler.
Focus, oh yeah, the focus, focus, yeah, yeah, the focus, focus, focus on females.
Shoot Straight Tampa. Tampa Bay's Firearms Superstore offers the area's largest selection of firearms and accessories, plus a state-of-the-art indoor firing range for both pistols and rifles. Shoot Straight Tampa buys and trades guns. Their on-site gunsmith provides repairs, parts, and ultrasonic gun cleaning. Monday's Ladies Night. Concealed weapons classes every Tuesday and Thursday evening. Shoot by the hour gun rentals are available. Shoot Straight Tampa. Open 7 days a week. Call 813-627-8550. 813-627-8550.